Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the second show of Third and Long with Coach Penn. For those of you who missed it last week or didn't download the version, I'm the head coach of the California Quake, which is a Tier 1 team in the IBFL. And the ladies at WFB Talk actually asked me to fill some time on Wednesdays, and this is going to be basically like a coaching session. You'll be able to ask questions of me and other coaches that call in and, you know, get into the mind of a coach. This past weekend, we had a lot of the conference championship games, so that's what this show is going to consist of. But before we just dive right into all that stuff, wanted to clear a few things up. I am a coach in the IDBFL, and therefore, I represent the California Quake and the IDBFL, whether I like it or not. Now, all the words that I type on my blog or say on this radio show are of that of my opinion. And I have been told that I can be quite honest and so much use of blunt, I guess you could say. And a lot of the things I say I'm sarcastic about just because that's the type of humor I have. And I want everybody to know that if you take something the wrong way, all you have to do is call in and ask me, hey, what did you mean by that? If you think I'm speaking bad about your team or your league, you know, just call in and ask. I have no problems with, deciphering the language I speak sometimes. So, you know, bear with me on there because I had an incident with Coach Duncan this weekend. He gave me crap for saying that talking bad about his team or something like that. And I really wasn't talking anything bad about his team, and he was just messing with me just the same. But I have a great relationship with Coach Duncan. I've got to know Coach Lee over the past year. Coach Anthony Bartley of the SoCal team, I know. Coach Ring of the SoCal Scorpions, I know. I have a pretty good relationship with all these coaches. And though we might not agree on, you know, specifics about football, we are very much in this to further women's football. And we do bounce ideas off of each other from time to time about, you know, what each of us can do better with our teams. So I want you to know that no matter what I say about who I say it, it's all done in the spirit of furthering women's football. With that being said, my show needs some intro or outro music, I guess you could say. So I'm going to put this out there to my listeners. If after listening to last week's show and this week's show, you feel that you found some perfect music to fit me and how I talk and what I represent, you know, shoot me an email. I can be reached headcoach@californiaquakefootball.com. That's my main email, and I check that on a daily basis. I'm very technologically savvy, so I'm always checking my internet, watching football footage if I can't make it to a game. So this week's show is going to basically cover the games that happened this weekend, the conference championship games, to set up the championship games. We got Chicago Force versus the Dallas Diamonds. In the IBFL, the Western Michigan Mayhem versus the H-Town Cyclones for the NWFA, and then the IBFL has a Tier 2, and the Montreal Blitz and Clarksville Fox are going to be playing that game, and today I have the GM, Rob, they call him Pops Brown, of the Clarksville Fox on with me, and I'm going to shoot some questions his way and let you know what his team is about. Are you on?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Josh. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good, Pops. Welcome to Third and Long.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, you're my first official guest. Last week, Boo was the first person to be the call-in, and now you're my first official guest, so you can write that down and put it on your mantle as something you've accomplished, because, you know,
right,
the show's just going to take off from here.
That's right. That's right.
Hopefully
get better from here.
Yeah. So basically, this being a coaching show, I wanted to get a breakdown of your team. I know we talked yesterday about I have one film on you, and it's the Chicago Force game, which you were beaten 40-0, and you're like, that's not our real team. And That's not what I review film for. I review film to see personnel, the types of offense and defense, and special teams that a team runs. So I want to give you the opportunity right now to let's first discuss your offense. What kind of offense is your base set?
The base set of the offense, first off, Coach Ron Graham is the head coach of the team. The players call him Gator. He's from Southern Florida.
Hey, I know Southern Florida very well.
Yes, that's where he's from. In fact, he's got a brother that owns a men's semi-pro team and runs that down there in Florida. But the base offense they run, they try to base everything mainly out of a very simplified offense. Try not to get too sophisticated with it. He's real big on execution rather than trickery. Do things and do it right. Keep it simple and keep it basic. So
right.
As far as on with the offense, we want to keep it as basic as we can.
So basically what you're saying is you run two receiver, tight end, two running backs, either whether it's in a pro split set or an I set then.
Right. Every once in a while he'll go with the slot receiver.
Okay.
But mainly he's running out of a power I, and he goes with two receivers and a split end. So.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Will he run a wing defense? I mean, a wing offense or something like that? He tries to keep it very basic. So.
All right. Well, you know, by what I've seen on some film, it looks like a well-organized offense. I mean, I've seen several offenses this year that have been quite different. And I was very surprised this weekend when I went and saw the H-Town versus Amazons and to see the wishbone still being run. I was like, wow, that's crazy. So it was pretty cool to see that and see it ran effectively still in the year that we're in.
I think it would be interesting. I haven't seen that, but I would like to see it. I mean, the wishbone, when it's done and it's executed properly, I would like to see how defenses today would counteract that, since you don't see it very often.
Yeah, well, L.A. did a good job counteracting it somewhat, and I'll get into that further into my show, but I was surprised that they were that successful with it, because it was just it's just something you don't see anymore. I mean, when I started in women's football 7 years ago, I mean, I saw a lot of wishbone, wing tee type offenses, and those are far and few between now, because people are actually running real base, pro set, offensive defenses, which is a good thing.
Right.
So on defense, what does your defensive coordinator, what's his name, and what does he throw out there?
Well, defensive coordinator, his name is Dave, and David Reeves is his name. They call him Super Dave on the team. He's actually the coach's son. And he's got a philosophy that, hey, if you can't score against us, you can't beat us. And
that's a very good philosophy.
Yeah, well, you know, we all believe that. And as a general manager, I tried to look for coaches that were that had that same kind of philosophy, and that's what they believe in. They believe in a very aggressive and a very strong attacking defense. And we believe that the best offense is an excellent defense. So if you can put them out of their game, and if you can control the ball with your defense, we think that that's the key. And it's been very successful this year with the team. We had a few shutouts this year, but the main thing that we're proud of is in a couple of the games, our first game that we played, by the end of the game, the other team had negative yardage.
And that's impressive.
Even in our playoff game, New England is an excellent team. I looked over the game film, but looking over all the stats, by the time they added everything up, by the end of the game, they told me that New England only had 12 yards of positive offense by the end of the game, which in a very competitive, aggressive game like it was. I mean, the score was lopsided, 32-0, but it really didn't showcase the ability of New England, because they're an extremely good team. And if you watch it, you'll see that there were a few times that they would have the ball second and one or be very close, and our defense was just off the chain. I mean, they would get them back and put them back into a punting when they had to punt the ball, when they had the ball at second and less than a yard. And that's just the way our defense has been all year. They are very, very aggressive. They smother the person with the ball. They attack the ball. They're very smart on defense. And so So that's what they're all about. So
all right, so you have a smaller defense that uses speed and aggressiveness to get the job done. That sounds good.
Yes.
All right, so you got Gator and Super Dave are your specific coaches. All right, special teams, you know, from what I found out over the last 7 years is that special teams is the Achilles heel of every single team in this league.
Yes.
Besides the fact that you only have two or sometimes with teams 3 days to practice during the week, special teams seems to get neglected. How does your team handle the scheduling of practice in special teams? Do you just work on it once a week, or do you try and mishmash a couple forms of each special teams into every practice?
Oh, we try and get it into every practice. They work different positions. They have different coaches. Actually, on the Fox, they got 7 coaches. And they work with the different players in different positions during practice and then bring the whole team together at the end. And in doing that, they're able to work some special teams in with different plays and different options, how to run, cover. There's a lot of different things in special teams that are different. A lot of people think, oh, I just throw your base defense in there. Well, base defense is good, but it's not, you know, it's a lot different than when you're in there with special teams. So
yes, it is.
We work a lot with that. And it can be interesting to see the look on some of their faces that have never done something like this before, especially new players, and they're like, you want me to do what? And so
I've seen that face plenty of times.
So it makes it very fun and interesting, but special teams is something that we do work on because it is important and it is neglected, as you did say before. So it's something that we try not to neglect. We've got a new kicker this year, Amberly Chiarella. She has just done an excellent job kicking the ball this year. Never kicked it before in her life until this year. In fact, she's a new player.
And she's a middle linebacker too?
Yeah, she's also our middle linebacker, and this girl is just off the chain with what she does as defense, linebacker. I mean, that is one girl that is just incredible. She's in the military. They just came out and did a big story on her from the 101st Airborne Division, Fort Campbell Courier out there. They came out the other day to practice, do a story on her because of her being in the military and what she does. But she is just an incredible athlete, soldier, mother, wife. I mean, she just does everything. And
all right. Well, so if you have such a good kicker, that must mean that you go for an extra point after every touchdown as opposed to 2 points.
I don't think they've kicked the ball once all year. I think they've gone for 2.
Really? So you're going for 2 team.
Yeah.
So basically you just utilize your kicker for kickoffs then.
Yes.
All right. Does she handle the punting duties as well?
Yes.
All right.
In fact, she got one off up there in, I think it was Wisconsin. When they played up there, she 60-some yard punt. So
there you go.
She was able to really get it off at times. And,
yeah, it's special teams is something that's unique in this sport because, you know, the lack of, I guess, knowledge and repetition over the years from women running. I mean, for us to run special teams, we're like, how hard is this to understand? And then, you know, it's just like, I guess it's really hard because I remember in high school I couldn't figure out any of this stuff till it been in my system 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
a lot of people realize with these women playing football, yes, there's some of them been playing 7, 8, 9 years. Most of them it's been a year or 2 years, and some people are like, well, why don't they get it? Why don't they understand it? Well, these guys have been playing since they were out of diapers. You know,
yeah, for real.
Most of them they get into high school, college, and then go on from there. They've been playing all their life. That's been their sport. And these women, they've always been told, you can't do that. You're not allowed to.
Yep.
You're a girl. And which we see now is wrong to do, because these women are athletes and they are great football players.
Yeah, it's all about the desire to compete.
It is. And these women are out there accomplishing a dream. And it's just like any child. Also, you tell them you can't do that. I don't want you down there in that creek. Well, guess where that kid's going to be first time mom and dad ain't looking. They're going to be down there in the creek.
These
women are getting to accomplish a dream accomplish something that women have always been told you can't do. You cannot play full contact football. You're not good enough. Well, they're proving everybody wrong now because they're not only good enough, they are excelling in it, and it's really awesome to watch. And
you don't have to
get back to watch them.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir on that one. I mean, I've been enjoying myself since 2002 with this, and I'm just every year it's a new experience for me with the amount of rookies we get and just the teaching them and watching their eyes, you know, open up wide and their brains soak everything in. So All right. Besides number 21, Amberly Chiarella, is that what you said?
Chiarella.
Who else is a standout player on your team?
Oh, gosh, there's so many of them.
I know. Everybody has about 10 to 15 special players, but I'm just talking about, you know, if I was to look at a scouting film, who are the people that I'm going to say, we got to worry about that person? Because as a coach, you know that there's three or four people on every single team that you build game plans around and you basically are looking at. So if you had to look at yourself and scout your own team, who are the people that you would say, this is who we have to pay attention to?
Defensive line.
The defensive line. So you got a masterful defensive line.
Yep.
All right. So who are those ladies?
Oh gosh, you got Bridget over there. You've got Nikki Lewis over there. Danita Hines is over there. You got Dassel plays over there. Tori Brown comes in there at times. Morgan Durham will come in there at times. Jennifer Pohl.
See, now that's what I like to hear right there, because it sounds like you've got a good rotation on your defensive line, and a lot of coaches I see in the league don't rotate their defensive line personnel. And on offensive line, you're not going to. It's all about cohesion and timing with an offensive line. But on defensive line, you need fresh bodies in there all the time to basically push that offensive line around. Great job on that. I like to hear that, Coach.
Well, you know, we try to keep them in and out, and not just that. They're playing in the heat and humidity with all the equipment that you need to wear to play professional football. And you put all the equipment on and the Under Armour, then you got jerseys on top of it and the helmet and everything else. It's hot already in there before you add the 100-degree temperature and the humidity. You've got to take them in and out. If not, you're going to kill them, you know. And if you're not able to train people and condition them and have girls to swap in and out, your defense is just not going to be there in the third and fourth quarter. So we work a lot on that.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for being on my show today, and I also want to point out that you are playing in the championship game in Chicago for the Tier 2 of the IWFL against Montreal Blitz. Now, how far away is Chicago from you guys?
It's about an eight-hour drive.
Eight-hour drive, okay. All my listeners are out there. You know how you see there's a six degrees of separation. So you tell somebody about the Fox Hunt Golf Scramble, and you – down the line, you'll get to somebody who's probably close to Clarksville and might want to participate in that golf scramble. All right, it's a fundraiser you guys are doing for the championship travel, right?
Yes. It's gonna be a golf scramble with start with a shotgun start. It's called the Fox Hunt Golf Scramble. We're gonna have that Saturday morning at Swan Lake here in Clarksville. I've got some people call me around the Huntsville, Alabama area that are coming up to play, a lot of people around Nashville. There's a lot of folks coming in to play. Public officials are coming in to play or send contributions in to help the team. We've had a great turnout so far of people that are going to be coming out there. We're real excited about it. And the girls are just overly excited about being able to make it to the championship game for the IWFL Tier 2 Championship. They're very excited to play in it, and I was able to arrange something last week that is just the girl to them. They just can't. It's giving them the extra incentive, I think, and they want to win, of course, a championship. But now they got a little incentive that's been thrown in there. Dolly Parton had her.
Dollywood, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, the executive there. You know, they're like, well, hey, you know, the guys win the Super Bowl, they get to go to Disneyland or Disney World. So girls win this, they get to go to Dollywood as Dolly's guest, Pigeon Forge, here in Tennessee. So the girls are real excited about that. And I'm like, y'all got to win to go. So you can tell a bunch of these women they get to go to Dollywood for the day. You know, look out Montreal.
Well, there you go. And then once again, congratulations on making the championship game. Hopefully I'll have some film on Montreal to be able to break down what they have. I mean, I already have some film with you guys. But
that's all in fun. I say good luck Montreal, but yes, surely I give a big shout out to Montreal. They've done a great job this year, getting all the way to the championship, and
yes, most
we look
definitely.
Forward. We really look forward to it, and from what I understand, it's going to be a historic one. Well, one is the first Tier 2 championship game in the IWFL. They say that the Clarksville Fox now is the youngest team to make it to a championship in the IWFL, and also first time a team from another country has competed in.
Yeah, got the international flavor added up.
Yeah, it's real exciting.
So,
Josh,
I mean,
having us on the show, Josh.
Well, you're very welcome, Pops. It's nice to be able to hear you, and I actually look forward to being in Chicago and meeting you in person.
Well, I won't be going with the team, so
you're not going to go, but I'll be meeting your coaching staff.
They are all looking forward to it. They said they are all looking forward to it. So you have a great time with them. While you're up there, we'll get some photo shots and get them on the website and stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the film when they get back.
Well, good. Congratulations again on your wonderful season, and all you listeners out there, if you haven't checked it out, you know, go to theclarksvillefox.com, check out their website. It's very well done. They have something on there for the Fox Hunt Golf Scramble, which, by the way, is a great name, and I want to thank you again, and hopefully I'll be talking to you again very soon after the championship game, okay?
Thanks a lot, Josh, and I wish you all the luck with your show. I'll be tuning in every week to listen to it. I think it's a great thing, and thank you for doing this for women's football.
You're welcome, Coach, and thanks again.
Thanks. Have a blessed evening.
All right, that was Pops of the Clarksville Fox. He's the general manager over there. Tier 2 team, which is the first season for the IWFL, Tier 2 competitive play, they're there against an international team, the Montreal Blitz, so that should be a good game. I'm anxious to see how the Tier 2 teams stack up against each other. I have their rosters right here, and on the IWFL website, the Clarksville Fox has 29 people listed, whereas the Montreal Blitz has 39 people listed. So if they bring 39 people, that automatically gives them the advantage right there because they have the rotation, and I'm not sure what the weather is like in Chicago, but I will be researching that since I will be there next week. So next on the show, I want to discuss the games that happened this weekend. As everybody knows, and if you don't know, Chicago Force beat Pittsburgh. Very exciting game. And the Dallas Diamonds took care of business up in Seattle. The Western Michigan Mayhem beat the Philadelphia Phoenix. And the H-Town Cyclones took care of L.A., this past weekend, and they were all pretty good games. I will attest to the first half of the Dallas-Seattle game because I actually watched that on my TV. I hooked up my laptop to the TV, and thanks to Ustream, was able to watch the game live. And then while I was watching that game, I was listening to the internet broadcast of the Force Passion game. So my house was full of football this weekend. And then after those games were over, I got to go right up the road to L.A., to Bassett High School and watch the L.A. Amazons, a local team here, play the H-Town Cyclones. And so I got a lot to discuss today. I was supposed to have a couple more guests, but some things popped up, things happened. So for those of you who want to chit-chat and throw in your opinion or say something, you know, feel free. Got the chat board up. If you're on the website, there's a chat now up at the right-hand corner above the Blog Talk Radio playing thing, and you can just put chat now and hop in there and you know, ask questions and say, hey, I got some things to say, and we'll unmute you, and you can chat with me. Once again, you're on Third and Long with Coach Penn. It's every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Every week I'll have something new to talk about. I know there's only a couple weeks left in the women's football season, but if we want to get good at this and be get the major sponsors and have it succeed as much as the other female sports that are succeeding very well, we need to make it a year-round thing and keep people informed and keep building our fan base. So let me go into talking about the Force Passion game. I didn't do any predictions last week, and I will try to avoid predicting because I am a coach, but I had thought that Pittsburgh was going to win this game. I didn't think Chicago's defense was going to be that effective against a very, very good Pittsburgh offense. And for them to shut them down, that says something about their defense, and that is something to be proud of. The Pittsburgh Passion are a well-known team who are very explosive on offense, and they held them to 7 points. From what I've heard on the radio and talking to their media director, George Howe, the Chicago Force, Lisa Horton went down sometime, I think in the second quarter, I think it was in the first half, and she actually hurt her knee. And after that, the Pittsburgh offense just went benign. They couldn't do anything, and it was just really bad offensively for them. So they basically started playing, you know, superior defense, because as long as Chicago didn't score, Pittsburgh would win. Well, the cardiac kids, as they're being called now, Chicago, got a drive in the fourth quarter and managed to punch it in with just over 4 minutes remaining. I mean, I was listening to it. I was like, are you kidding me? Not again. And I was just like, I know Coach Hall's going to go for two. He did it last week. Why wouldn't he do it again? And reading their synopsis on their website, they called the same exact play that they did last week. I mean, that's good coaching right there, because obviously the players had the confidence that they would score on the play, having done the same exact thing the week before. So congratulations to the Chicago Force, not only for reaching the championship game, but for beating a championship team. The Pittsburgh team is very good, and they are very well respected within the women's football community. And I'm sure that that hard-fought game was hard on them because they lost. But no matter who won or lost in that game, the fans in the stands were the real winners. They saw a great game. So I look forward to talking to Coach Stahl next week if he's available. I've put in a call to the media director with the Chicago Force, and hopefully they'll be on the show next week. I also have a couple other coaches of the championship teams calling in next week. So next week should be quite fun. I might actually have to bump this up to 2 hours, but I'm not sure yet, so don't get your hopes up, because I don't like talking on the phone, and 2 hours might just push how long I can chat for. 617 area code. I don't know where that's from, but if you want to post them, put them on through, I'll figure it out. Maybe not. Okay. BJ's running the switchboard for me. And she told me there was a 617 area code on. I don't know who that is. But if you punch it on through, I'll take it on. Right now, we'll move on to the Phoenix Mayhem game. Philadelphia Phoenix versus the Western Michigan Mayhem. And I actually talked to Coach Matt Coach, which is funny, today. And he's going to send me some film on their team, so I'll actually be able to see what Western Michigan runs. And they're in the NWFA, of course. And they blanked Philly. And Philly is another, sort of like the Chicago Pittsburgh game. It's Philly, the offense, versus West Michigan Mayhem, who obviously had a great defensive game. I mean, shut out a team. And in the playoffs, it's the talent is so much better, and the parity should be that much, you know, obvious. Whereas during the regular season, you know, we expect to see some blowouts. You know, in the IWFL, you have Tier 1 playing Tier 2 sometimes, and then, you know, towards the end of the season, a lot of the smaller market teams lose players due to injuries, finances, and stuff like that, and the bigger market teams, they still have all their key players, and you'll see a bunch of blowouts throughout the season, but in the playoffs, you don't expect to see blowouts. So I wouldn't actually consider 21-0 a blowout, but that's a dominating game right there. That's a dominating performance. I mean, not to let a team score. Shutouts are very rare in the playoffs, and it's something to be very proud of. So next week, I'll be sure to delve into the Mayhem game and what they're about with Coach, and find out what happened during that game. There's not much on their website. They just basically throw all of their credit towards their line, offense and defensively. They basically said they control the line of scrimmage, and to tell you the truth, that's all you need to do in football. If you can control the line of scrimmage on offense and defense, your chance of victory increases exponentially. And that's one of the things I tell my ladies all the time. Listen, I don't care how far you can throw the ball. I don't care how fast you are at running the ball. I don't care how hard you hit. If you cannot block and tackle on the offense and defensive line, then it doesn't matter, because that quarterback's not going to get the throw off. The running back's not going to be able to turn on her speed, and you're not going to be able to make a big hit if somebody's blocking. So, it's very important. The teams with the best offensive line and the best defensive line usually will win the best games, and they'll be considered the best teams. That being said, let's move on to a team that I know has a very good offensive and defensive line, and that's the Dallas Diamonds against the Seattle Majestics. Dallas had to travel after beating us to Seattle, as Seattle was the number one seed and Dallas was the number two seed. I talked to a couple of their coaches, Seattle coaches, during the week, and they felt like they had a good game plan. And after watching the first half, I thought they did very well. Defensively, they did very well. They held Dallas to 17 points. And let me say this. When we went to Dallas, we had to go to Dallas with their officials on their field in their weather, and it was bad. It was rough, and we totally just did not handle it very well. Seattle had the opportunity to get Dallas on a long travel. I mean, Dallas to Seattle is not a drive game. They had to fly, and everybody has jet lag. And I don't care if you flew in Friday night or Saturday. There's going to be some amount of jet lag there. Luckily, it was a 3 o'clock game, so I was able to catch it, but I can guarantee you that if it was a 7 o'clock game, it probably would have been a little bit more to Dallas's favor. But 3 o'clock game in Seattle's favor, they have the home field that they're used to, and they also have their officials, and they have, you know, the advantage of being fresh, slept in their own beds the night before, and being comfortable where they are. Dallas is a machine. They come in there ready to go, and they don't really care what's going on around them. They just come there to play football and do it as best they can. From what I saw, 17-0 in the first half, Seattle actually had the chance to take the lead in the beginning of the game, and I've seen several of the games of Seattle this year, and they don't have what I would consider a great kicking game, but they should have had at least 6 points on the board at halftime, and 17-0 or 17-6 doesn't seem like that much of a difference, but I would have liked to have the points on the board, and when they got down to the 5-yard line, I was really surprised that they didn't try and kick a field goal. They had it inside the 5 or 10-yard line a couple times, and they elected to go for it when a kick would have been done wonders for morale. I mean, to have some points on the board and, you know, possibly have the first lead against Dallas the whole season, that would have been something to brag about right there. They looked like they had a great game plan. They basically did the same things we did. They shut them down on their first drive, and then they were able to shut them down a couple more times, but they couldn't, you know, put points on the board to not so much get Dallas worried, but say, hey, listen, you know, do we have to change anything up? This team just drove all the way down the field on us. Yada, yada, yada. I was just surprised that I would have put points on the board, and I'm not second-guessing or armchair quarterbacking from anybody's perspective, but watching it, I was just like, why don't they kick it? And I'm just sitting there going, oh, yeah, they aren't, you know, that's not a strong suit of theirs. And, you know, maybe they don't have a kicker, or maybe they have what I was talking about with a pops. You know, how much do they practice special teams? It's just so big to be able to get points when you can, and I was just very disappointed that they weren't able to score in the first half when they had opportunities. I had a couple of the players over when we were watching the game, and Rachel Gore broke through, I think it was the first or second drive, and, I mean, she was gone. All of us that were in the room just stood up like, touchdown! You know, we were like, oh, I can't believe they just scored, and out of nowhere, Jessica Springer proved why she's the third fastest person in the league. She came from off the screen to on the screen to eating Rachel Gore. And it turned out to be like a 25-yard run and set up their first goal, scoring opportunity. But I was just like, wow, you know, when she has to run, she actually does. Because most of the games I've seen on her, she's just jogging. She doesn't care. Their blocking is so good, and I wouldn't say get away with it, but aren't called for a lot of holdings and blocking the backs. She usually just, you know, jogs, hits the corner, keeps on running because everybody's blocked. She doesn't have to run away from anybody or turn on any speed. The only time you ever see her do anything is when she goes up the middle and she just plows over people. And then she's a monster when it comes to that because she is so strong, as proven by her 23 reps on the 150 pounds. So Jessica Springer, She saved a touchdown because, I mean, that would have been 7-0 Seattle, and that would have, I mean, momentum and the swing of a game in football is so crazy, and that would have been something phenomenal if they could have actually taken the lead early in the game, you know, made Dallas think. One of the things I was surprised, Dallas has run the same plays all year with much effectiveness, and they actually ran some different formations this game. I mean, I saw them in the shotgun with two running backs, and then saw them just do some different things that I hadn't seen all year on film. And it was nice to know that they can switch it up when they need to. And I don't think they ever needed to. They just showed that they can actually do other things. And I think they may have been practicing for the championship game and say, hey, listen, we need to get some in-game reps of this, because I think I've seen like 5 films and a couple of those formations I had never seen before. So I'm excited to see the Dallas-Chicago game live, because it pits a defensive team versus an offense and explosion team, and Dallas actually is a pretty good defensive team too. So, I mean, they haven't been scored on a whole bunch this season either. So the Dallas-Seattle game, I was a little disappointed in the final score. Seattle did finally score in the fourth quarter, I believe it was. I can check on that real quick. But I was hoping for a little bit more from Seattle, but, I mean, they only scored 38. So, I mean, I would hate to say that's a win in itself, but, I mean, once again, like I said, these are supposed to be the playoff games, and you would expect games to be a little closer. Are the Diamonds that good? Well, we'll find out this week, you know, or I should say next weekend when they play the Chicago Force. I mean, that'll be huge. Let's see, on the IWF website, they haven't updated the quarter-by-quarter scores yet, so I guess we'll leave that one alone. But let's see, the other game I was actually at, so, I mean, I listened to one game, watched another on TV, and then I attended the H-Town Cyclones versus the LA Amazons, and I've followed the LA Amazons since I moved out here, because the first year I was a coach with the Long Beach Aftershock, and it was my first year coaching. I was defensive coordinator, and we actually had a preseason game against the LA Amazons, and I believe it was their first game ever too. And so even though the Long Beach Aftershock was made up significantly made up of a lot of ex-California Quake players, the ones that won the championship in 2001, it was our first year as a team, and more specifically, it was the first year as a coaching staff. We ended up playing the Amazons in a preseason game just to see how things went, and it was quite successful. We won, I think it was like 66-6 or 63-6, but I mean, it was a fun time. It was my first game, and I learned a lot that game. That was the one and only game I ever coached the whole game from the sideline, because I remember Craig Henderson, he was a coach with me. Anthony Bartley was a coach on that one, and Chris Love was a coach on that one. And I was the only defensive coach. I had to coach all the positions on defense, and it was a rough year for me, but head coach was Craig Henderson, and he actually came up to me during the game. He's like, can't you see this? You know, yelling at me. Don't you see what's going on right there? And I'm like, I have no clue what you're pointing at. And he's like, that's it. You're going upstairs from now on. So the rest of the season I spent upstairs from the stands, or the coach's box, whatever you want to call it, watching the games and actually calling in my defensive sets and schemes from there. And I learned a lot. It's much different watching the game from the field as it is from the stands. So all you armchair quarterbacks that think you could coach better than the people that you see coaching every day, try and do it from the field. It's totally different, and I believe the rest of the coaches that are listening can confirm that. But watching the LA H-Town game, I was shocked to see that H-Town ran the wishbone. They ran the wishbone all game. The first half, I don't even think they ran another set besides double tight, 3 in the backfield, 1 fullback, 2 tailbacks. I could not believe how effective they were running it, too. And to squash this whole debate of the H-Town team is the Houston Energy, no, it's not. They have a completely different coaching staff, so even when you have a team, if the coaching staff is switched, it's a different team. And I did some research, and there's only 14 players from the Houston Energy that actually are on the H-Town Cyclones. And while they may be, you know, some of the stars from the Energy turning over, they're just 14 players that decided to join a team to keep playing women's football. Because, you know, nobody's been told or has heard anything about the WPFL as far as I'm concerned, I hope it told it. I hope it told it because, you know, that means there's only two leagues left and we're one merger away from women's football really taking off. So I am kind of anxious to hear about the Michigan team from the coach. And then it was just interesting to watch. The Amazons are a very good team, but what killed them was the fact that they'd only played 5 or 6 games this year. The time off and the lack of games played, repetition-wise, game experience, just really, really hurt them because when they were in rhythm and doing what they were good at doing, they were very good. I mean, they drove down the field and scored at will on that first drive to take the – I think it was take the lead or maybe it was a tie. I think it was to take the lead. And I was like, wow, number 21, Deanna Guidry, is fast. And she actually doesn't use her speed just to get the corner and turn and burn. She actually is very good at running people over and setting up her blocks, which is something that it takes to be a good running back. It doesn't matter what league you're in, men, women, Pop Warner. People blocking are the people that you need to follow. And she did a very good job at that. And if the passing game was a little bit more effective for LA, they probably would have done a lot better, but they were stuck running the ball. And once Houston, who ran a 4-4 defense, adjusted to the outside speed, because all LA did was run off tackle and sweeps. They have a kind of pro set, fake a outside lead or blast, and then they hand it right back up the middle, sort of like a dive. But it was just they had all the linebackers in the inside, those four linebackers. They had two in the middle, and the two outsides were basically inside the ends. And once they adjusted, LA couldn't consistently move the ball and get first downs. And that's how you do things in football. You got to get first downs. You can't just rely on a long run by a running back or a long pass by a quarterback to a receiver, you know, to win games. You have to be able to drive the ball down the field, get first downs, eat up the clock so the other team can't be in the field and wear down that defense. Well, I saw no wear down of Houston's defense. They were stout all game, and they very good tacklers, and they hit very hard. As for the flip side, H-Town's offense, number 33, let me find her name real quick, McIntosh, yeah, heard her name a lot. She was a workhorse for them. Greenwood was another one of the tailbacks that they ran the wishbone with, and she tended to fumble a lot, and we saw her taping her wrist, so I believe she did have a wrist problem. She was a very good runner, but she did fumble, I think, twice. I think they lost one of the fumbles. But it was a very good game to watch because up until 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it was a one-touchdown game. People that were there and actually listened and watched the game will say that LA had their chance right before halftime when they got tackled at the inch line on fourth down. All the receiver had to do, Gibbons, I think her name was, basically reached the ball out and put it over the goal line, and it would have been a touchdown, but she got tackled and just kind of secured the ball and fell down. Well, they missed the touchdown because of that, but the same thing happened to Houston later in the game. They got tackled inside the one, and it was a turnover on down. So it all works out, even in the end. So we will nix on that. That doesn't matter. Anybody that brings it up, it still would have been a one-touchdown game, and they eventually got it there. And if, say, they scored, then Houston does the same thing. But it was 21-14, I don't know, after the first drive in the third quarter. LA was able to drive it down there, and it was a very good defensive battle. Finally, LA had figured out how to stop the wishbone, and they started just blitzing crazy-like. And they started making some tackles and stopping him, and then next series, the H-Town comes out in a different formation for, like, the first time all game. They had one single back, two receivers, a tight end, and it thoroughly confused L.A., and I'm not saying confusing as they didn't know what to do. They were like, oh, what plays are they going to run out of? Because I don't think they're ready for that kind of a thing. So Houston, loosened them up with a couple plays like that, and then they went right back to the wishbone. And that took up most of the fourth quarter. And then they ran it in, and the skies opened up. I could not believe how bad it was raining. I was sitting on the H-Town side just because at the start of the game, for some reason, the way Bassett High School set up, the home side is where the sun sets, or the sun sets opposite the home side. So the home side, you get the sun in your face for the first, you know, half, and I didn't want that. So every time I've been there, I've always sat on the wayside. And we're sitting over there, and it starts pouring in. The H-Town fans look at us and like, this is Southern California weather? And we're like, no, it doesn't ever rain, and now you're going to find out what Southern California is all about because people don't know how to drive when it rains. And it didn't rain. It poured. And from there on, you know, Houston put that 2-touchdown lead up, and the game was over. Amazon had to go to a pass-oriented type offense, and they really couldn't do anything. They did a couple 4-receiver sets, 5-receiver sets, and then Houston ended up getting the ball back and right back to the wishbone. Boom. Right all the way down to the goal line and scored, and I think they missed their fourth extra point, so it ended up being 34-14 as the final, but the game was much closer than that because they scored 2 touchdowns toward the end of the game. I mean, it was 21-14 for a majority of the second half, and it was just a very good defensive battle. Both teams were deserving of the victory, and I'm just still in awe about how well that the Houston team ran that wishbone, because you don't see it much anymore. The wishbone is, I wouldn't say a dead offense, but kind of a sort of like a VCR. You'll find it every now and again, and it does the job. It's just, you know, there's so many other things that do it better. But for what they have, they run it very well. They block it very well. And 33 is a very good runner, and they rotated 2 or 3 people into that fullback position, and they knew how to block. I know DM was online announcing the game, and he kept on saying the left side was wide open all game. And it's funny because the best blocking I saw was on the right side. I just think that the defense's right side was weaker. The blocking on the offensive right side was a whole bunch better than the blocking on the left side where they kept on scoring on. I think that because 33 lines up on the right, most of the plays go to the left. But yeah, it was a very entertaining game, and as much as I like women's football, I go to as many games as I can. I've been to several of the Amazon games. Went to the Houston Energy SoCal game last year for the championship. You know, I try and do my part to support women's football because, you know, it needs all of us out there as much as possible. BJ, if you're listening, is anybody out there wanting to talk, chit-chat? Once again, you're listening to Third and Long with Coach Penn. Just recapping the games from last weekend. If you want to chit-chat or say something in the last 10 minutes, you know, just type in your number on the chat board. It's a chat button. You push it to pop up a board. You can type in your first 3 numbers, the area code, or last 4 numbers, and we'll push it through, and you can ask some questions or give your opinion on the games that you saw or heard this weekend. Who were you most impressed with? Stuff like that. I got some filler over here if nobody really wants to chat. But I was looking at the number to call. Yeah, that might be nice. Well, I don't have a number to call. Yes, I do. It's right here on my phone. The number is 347-826-7278. And after you call that, if you feel like you'll be a regular listener, just store it in your phone under WFB Talk or Coach Penn. I mean, you can call in on a weekly basis, you know, get to know me, and I'll get to know you, and we can always chat football. And like I said, I'm a football fan. I love football, whether it's women, college, high school, pro. Eventually during the off season, we're going to get into a lot of hot button topics like the leagues basically banning anything to do with the other leagues. That's been big this week. I'm not going to get into it this week just because it's too fresh and there's too much stuff out there going on right now and too many opinions. Let everybody get a couple weeks to think about that before we throw that back out there. But next week on the show, I plan to have the Western Michigan head coach, Coach Matt, and then we can go ahead and hopefully have Coach Stahl on. I believe I'm going to have Dion back next week. And I'm going to give a detailed breakdown of the games from what I see on film, because I will have film on every single one of these teams by next week. I put in the call to the Montreal Blitz. Hopefully they'll be able to get me something. That's the only team I'm kind of worried about right now, but I have one tape on Clarksville, a tape on, or I should say DVD, on Chicago, a bunch of film on Dallas. Western Michigan is sending me something. And so I've seen H-Town in person, so I really don't need film to break down that would do. As much as they ran the 90% of that offense, I'm pretty confident that that's what they do and that's what they're going to do. Kind of an old-school mentality by their coaches. I believe that Poppy is their big coach. They're a head coach, and he's basically, you know what, we're going to run it right down your throat, and you're going to have to stop it. You stop it, then I'll think about something else to do. I believe that's the kind of coaching mentality he has, and I want to thank the H-Town fans for being nice and putting up with the quake, because there was about 15 or 20 of us all sitting on their side, and we were rowdy and just having a good time. I got a comment on the chat board. Nick says they have more plays, but they made 5 yards every time they ran the ball. So, and I'm not disputing that at all. I'm not knocking the play calling or anything. I mean, I've been in that situation, too, where, you know what? Hey, they're not stopping. Let's just keep running it. And it goes back along to that old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, their offense definitely wasn't broke last night, or on Saturday night. But I have some interesting stats. I basically pulled up the stats on the IWFL website this past week. And one thing I don't like about the IWFL website is the statting function. It's not as easily sortable, and you can't find out all the stuff and great things that, you know, the players are doing, who's the best passer, who's the best rusher, who's a sack queen, you know, stuff like that. The NWFA does a good job with their stat program and the way they break it down and have all the leaders on there. I mean, but once again, it all falls onto the teams and if they're reporting them. And as I was checking the stats on the Fox today, I was like, well, let me compare it with the Blitz. And the Blitz, they don't report their stats. So that's something they'll have to work on for next year. But guess what? We're all voluntary people on these teams, and we got to do what we can. And all I can say is, you know, get people around you that will support every decision that you make. If you choose to consume your life with women's football, know that that you're going to be your life for 6 to 8 months out of the year. BJ is telling me that in the NWFA you get fined if you don't report your stats. I believe it's just along the same lines as in the IWFL. I'm not sure how big the fine is. Obviously not that much if 6 and 7 teams aren't reporting their stats. Here are some of the things since the Dallas Diamonds are playing the Chicago Force. Both of them have been pretty good about inputting their stats. I know there was a IWFL stat malfunction for, I think, June 24th games. So Dallas has to redo them, but they haven't submitted. Neither one of them have submitted their playoff stats yet, but Dallas leads the league in yards averaged per play and almost or per rush at almost 10 yards a carry. They lead the league in rushing yards per game, and the Force isn't shabby at all. I mean, they average over 5 yards a carry and almost 200 yards a game, but Diamonds 10 yards a carry and then 240 per game. Touchdowns, big discrepancy, but then the Diamonds are a huge offensive force. They've scored 33 rushing touchdowns to the Force, 19. First downs, different story. They've only had 52 first downs, whereas the Force have 43. And, yes, I know that 52 is more than 43, but, you know, considering the touchdown to first down ratio, that's more realistic to a grind out, control the ball type of offense. On the passing stats, they're pretty much even. They both have a 40% completion rate, 40-41 yards, 729 to 564. Not much, both have 11 touchdowns thrown, a couple interceptions for both teams. The Force has allowed 10 sacks, whereas the Diamonds have only allowed 5, so that's a big thing. But on defense is where the numbers really start to stand out for me, because the Diamonds have 13 interceptions. The Force has 13 interceptions. pass deflections. Dallas has 14 knockdowns, and the Force has 32. So their secondary actually is pretty good, I would think. Yards per game, the Force allow less yards per game, and they have a ton of tackles for loss. So I don't know if Dallas tracks those stats, but, you know, 152 yards loss is, that's a touchdown and a half you're taking away from somebody. So let's see. We got about 5 minutes left in the show, and I just want to thank everybody for listening in today. Once again, we just recapped the conference championship games this weekend. I had a talk with Coach Pops of the Clarksville Fox, you know, getting his breakdown on his own team. Next week will be more of the scouting report that I talked about last week. I'll scout the games and have a scouting report on each team's offense and defense. Break that down for all you people out there. Remember, I'm actually going to Chicago. So if you listen and you're in Chicago, I'll have my Quake shirt, Quake coaching shirt on, and feel free to come up to me. Coach Penn's the name. Not shy at all, so just come out and talk to me. I can't be shy if I'm having, you know, talking to all these people on the radio. You guys are the ones that are shy. I mean, nobody wants to talk back. So hopefully next week everybody will have some opinions and predictions to throw out there for the championship games. We've got three big ones. Both leagues are having their championship games on the same date, so that should really light up the message boards with predictions and just overall general talk. So the women's football season is winding down. It's been a great season. I'm very happy. The season's over. It's been long and a lot of work. I'm very proud of my ladies. They ended the season 8-1, made the playoffs for the first time since 2001. So we got a lot to look forward to in the upcoming months. You know, a lot of talk on how teams, you know, do their off-season programs. You know, I saw Dion posted something on there about, you know, the organization and the building and teaching of football needs to be a year-round thing so that these ladies know what they're doing when practice comes around. So I want to second that. We all as coaches need to make sure that we have some sort of off-season conditioning, strength program, something along those lines, even if it's as simple as clinics. We ran clinics last year. Got to keep the word out about women's football. Keep positive thoughts, positive mentions. Let people know what's out there so that more and more people are attending each of our games and it's earning more money, and then people with the deep pockets will start recognizing it and say, hey, you know what, I'd like to sponsor that. I think that's something that I can earn some money back on because you put a good product out on the field and people seem to enjoy it. So that's all I have for you tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Once again, I'll be on Wednesday, 7 p.m., starting along with Coach Ben. I am going to sign out now. BJ can go ahead and slap on some music, and I say thank you, and talk to you next week. Good night.